The lunatic farmer of Polyface Farms came to town to speak, and after warming up the audience with his down-in-the-farm humor, he leaned into the microphone and without the slightest twitch of uncertainty said, "You can't have small farms and big government." Well, the shocked audience, the silence of that shocked audience at least, leads us to ask you, can we have small farms and big government?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned to the 1,055th edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Melbourne who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Jason Struby on the boards. Jason.
It's my pleasure.
Do you think we can have small farms and big government?
Yikes. I don't know.
You don't know?
Things are getting pretty hairy.
It's good to know that you don't know.
Yes, sir.
Producer Sarah Rezai, what do you think? Do you think we can have small farms and big government?
Honestly, I don't have a clue when it comes to that.
Okay, good. Maybe we'll learn a little bit as we go along today, hopefully. Well, folks, that lunatic farmer of Polyface Farm, Joel Salatin, came to town to address an audience of activists, Aggies, and foodies. After warming up the audience with his down-on-the-Virginia-farm humor, Salatin leaned into the microphone and without the slightest twitch of doubt said, "You can't have small farms and big government." Well, the raucous audience went stone-cold silent at that. That Salatin believes you can't have small farms and big government is evident in the titles of the books he has authored. Everything I Want to Do is Illegal. Folks, This Ain't Normal. And The Sheer Ecstasy of Being a Lunatic Farmer. Though the Salatin family's Polyface Farm is a successful business, it was made so by going in the exact opposite direction of conventional agriculture, where the convention is to confine animals and feed them grain shipped in from elsewhere. Polyface grazes its animals on the grasses of the farm's pastures. When it comes to the government's rules and regulations, Polyface Farm is like most small farms, the proverbial square peg in a round hole. Government has been designed to facilitate one kind of agriculture. Polyface Farm is the other kind. The conviction with which Salatin delivered his assertion and the stunned silence of his audience leads us to ask, can we have small farms and big government? To help us address this question today, we have as our guest you. That's right. You are the guest today. Your job is to pick up your phone and dial 831-479-1080 and address this question. Can we have small farms and big government? Kind of like any small business when it gets right down to it. Can we have small farms and big government? 831-479-1080 is the phone number. Your job, pick up your phone and join us and have a conversation. So why would a small farmer or any small business person for that matter come to think you can't have a small farm and big business operating at the same time? Another question, why would a farm size have an impact on government policy? 831-479-1080. Will small farms be allowed to survive in an economy controlled by big farms and big government? 831-479-1080. So since we're talking about size, we're going to take a few moments here to have a little fun and talk about the economies of scale. Jason, have you ever heard of the economies of scale?
I think I've heard you mention that before.
You've heard me mention
yes.
it. Any place else?
Not sure.
Not sure. Sarah, have you ever heard of the economies of scale before?
I'm pretty sure I've had a couple professors mention it.
Okay, a couple professors. There you go. Well, here is the definition of economies of scale. See if it makes sense to the both of you. Economies of scale are the cost advantages that enterprises obtain due to its size, output, or scale of operation, with cost per unit of output generally decreasing with increasing scale as fixed costs are spread out over more units of output. Does that make the least bit of sense to you, Jason?
I think so. Cheaper to operate with a higher output.
Okay. Sarah, makes sense?
Yeah, that's not what I got, but that makes sense.
Okay, so I sometime at Trofarma devised a little example so that it would be a little bit easier to understand than the gobbledygook of some economics professor. So what I did is I invented the notion that there's two farms, and Jason, you'll be Farmer Jason today.
Okay.
You have 1 acre of tomatoes.
Okay.
Okay, Sarah, mm-hmm. Farmer Sarah, you have 1,000 acres.
Okay.
Of tomatoes.
Awesome.
Okay, so you're the big cheese tomato grower, and Jason, you're the little cheese tomato farmer. Okay, so one day, Farmer Jason and Farmer Sarah go to town to buy a $10,000 tractor. All right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Jason, how much does that $10,000 tractor cost you?
$10,000.
Sarah, how much does that $10,000 tractor cost you?
$10,000.
Yes, but no. You see, you have 1,000 acres to spread that cost over. Mm-hmm. So your cost is like $10
per acre.
I see.
And Jason's is $10,000 per acre. Mm-hmm. So now we start, the economies of scale start to come in. It makes a lot more sense for you to buy that tractor because it only costs you $10
right.
per acre. Jason costs $10,000 per acre. So if Jason runs down to the store to buy a $10,000 tractor, he's going to be hard put to make that tractor pay because he's going to be making big payments from a small farm. Whereas your farm with 1,000 acres, mm-hmm. $10 an acre, cheap to buy a tractor, right?
I see. Okay.
Making sense?
So far, so good, yeah.
So far, so good. Okay. Now, the next level of this comes into play. Let's say Congressman Fred Frankfurter is running for re-election in a very tight race for Congress. Okay. And he's a very important congressman. He's a chairman of the water committee, and he decides who gets water and who doesn't get water.
Mm.
Okay. Now, it is incumbent upon both of you, both Farmer Jason and Farmer Sarah, to root him on to success, right? But, and you each decide to invest $10 per acre in a contribution. Now, Jason gives his $10 to the good congressman, who is very much appreciative. Thank you very much.
Oh, sure.
But Sarah can give $10 per acre, and how much money are you going to give him?
I'm going to give him
$10,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, who's going to get the water if it comes down to Farmer Jason or Farmer Sarah?
I have a feeling it would be Farmer Sarah.
I have a feeling it would be Farmer Sarah. What would you do, Farmer Jason?
Yikes.
Would you feel like the square peg in the round hole then?
Something like that, yep.
Something like that.
Yes.
Okay. So now, let's take it one step further. Let's say so you're both growing tomatoes, and all of a sudden, there's an epidemic of bad tomatoes that gets into the food chain. And people all over the country get sick from eating bad tomatoes. Okay? Now, Congressman Frankfurter is put upon by everybody that got sick by the tomatoes. You got to do something about this. You got to fix the bad tomatoes and make them safe. Now, Congressman Frankfurter doesn't know anything about tomatoes, does he? I mean, he's a lawyer. Went to law school. Doesn't even know how to plant a petunia. But he's a very good lawyer. So what is Congressman Frankfurter going to do to make certain food is safe? Who is he going to call on to say we need to figure this out? Is he going to call on Farmer Jason or Farmer Sarah?
Probably Farmer Sarah.
What do you think?
Yeah, I think I'd be in trouble.
No, not necessarily. Mm-hmm. So what was it that Rahm Emanuel said about trouble or crisis? Never let a serious crisis in government go to waste. Mm-hmm. And the reason is, when there's a serious crisis, you can do things that you could never do before, right?
Right.
So Congressman Frankfurter is going to Sarah and says, Sarah, Farmer Sarah, we need to fix this. And Farmer Sarah says, yes, it's a very bad situation. We have to fix this. So we're going to make some rules and regulations, right?
Right.
And what are those rules and regulations going to say? We'll pick that up when we come back from the break. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. You are the guest. Pick up your phone and join us today. We're talking about can we have small farms and big government? Or are the two mutually exclusive? 831-479-1080.
Get this. You can earn a 5-6 or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city.
You can be old or young.
Rich or poor.
Married or single.
You can own land outright.
Or lease it year to year.
You can grow small fruits on prairie bench lands.
Houseplants in coastal valleys.
Flowers on steep wooded hillsides.
Vegetables in the city green belts.
And ornamentals in neighborhoods of fancy homes.
Get all the help you need to get growing at MetroFarm.com.
Get the complete guide to growing high-value specialty crops for the city at MetroFarm.com.
Get experts to look at your land and assess which crops to grow at MetroFarm.com.
Get advice on how to plan and develop your project at MetroFarm.com.
And get news about the business of farming for the city.
Yes, you can earn a 5-6 or even a 7-figure income by farming high-value specialty crops on a small parcel of land in or near the city.
Grow for the money today at MetroFarm.com. That's MetroFarm.com.
Welcome back, folks. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Today we're talking about scale in agriculture, and specifically, can we have small farms and big government? That is the question put on the table by an assertion from Joel Salatin, who said we can't have small farms and big government. Why does he say that? That's what we're talking about right now as we discuss the economies of scale. When we left off, we were talking about a crisis of bad tomatoes in the food chain. And Congressman Fred Frankfurter has been called into action. You must do something, Congressman, to fix the bad tomatoes so that nobody ever eats a bad tomato again. So what does Congressman Frankfurter do? He has two farmers here to work with, Farmer Jason, who has an acre of farmland, and Farmer Sarah, who has 1,000 acres of farmland in tomatoes. Now, each of these farmers have budgeted $10 per acre to the Congressman's reelection committee. Farmer Jason, how much net have you given the Congressman for his reelection?
That'd be about $10.
$10.
Yep.
And Farmer Sarah, how much have you given net?
$10,000.
Okay. So, who is the good congressman going to listen to?
If I had to guess, I'd say Farmer Sarah, me.
Farmer Sarah, yeah. What about you, Farmer Jason?
My backyard farm is starting to feel like it might be in the crosshairs at this point.
Yes. Well, how are you going to have a say?
It's going to be pretty tough, considering my influence is about 100 times less than the
okay.
Farmer Sarah.
Okay. So, Congressman Fred Frankenberger turns to Farmer Sarah and says, Farmer Sarah, what are we going to do? Well, Farmer Sarah is going to get together with other farmers of her size and say, let's figure out how to do this so that there's no more rotten tomatoes. And now, what kind of rules and regulations are you going to establish? Will those rules and regulations make it possible for you to continue farming?
Well, I don't see why not.
Yeah. Now, will those rules and regulations make it possible for that pesky Jason to keep farming?
I'm envisioning rules that will specifically put me in a very hard spot.
And what kind of rules would those be?
I don't know. Maybe something like I need to get a certain, let's see, I need to get my farm up to a certain code or standard.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what that might be, but maybe probably something pretty expensive I'm envisioning.
Probably something pretty expensive. Let's say it costs $10,000.
Right. Yeah, that's a little more than my, I just spent that on a tractor.
How much would that cost Farmer Jason, the $10,000 fix?
More than my entire operation
so far. It would cost you $10,000 per acre, right?
Right.
Well, Farmer Sarah, how much would that $10,000 fix cost you per acre?
So 10 grand an acre?
No, it would cost you $10
per acre.
Right, So, could you afford the fix at $10 per acre?
Yeah, that's no sweat off my back.
No sweat off Sarah's back. Farmer Jason?
That's all the sweat off mine.
It's all the sweat off yours?
And then some.
Okay. Well, there goes our little homespun analogy of why certain farmers would feel put upon by big government. So these are a couple of comments that we received on the forum page at metrofarm.com on this subject exactly. So you'll see there's two different ways of seeing this, and that'll kind of frame our discussion for the day. This from Betty. I am afraid Joel Salatin is correct. After a lifetime of farming, we are at our limit with a bureaucratic wasteland that is being used to undermine small farming. When it finally hits home with locals, well, it will be unpleasant. But continuing to farm with all the establishment requirements is absurdity. Those younger than us may hang on longer, but unless there are drastic changes, it is over. Get used to not knowing where your groceries come from and what might be on them or in them. There it is. Well, this from Jim, which expresses a different sort of notion. I understand Salatin's feelings. That said, I am curious. From where I look now, I doubt the veracity of such broad-brush characterizations that we can't have small farms in big government. I tend to think more along the lines, as does Jim Hightower, that it is not the existence or nor size of government that is the fly in the ointment. It is the lack of resolve to prevent government from being corruptible by big money. That would be you, Sarah. And to make it democratic. That would be you, Jason. I wonder, if that big government were preferentially aiding Salatin, would he then consider it the cat's meow? What about if it were preferentially benefiting all small farmers? Well, Jason, given what we know about the economies of scale, do you think that we can talk government out of being corruptible?
Well, it's going to be hard in a time when money equals speech, and my speech is pretty limited right now, you know, with my with the size of my operation. It's going to be hard for my voice to get heard, you know, with it being about 100 or 1,000 times quieter than old Sarah's.
Mm-hmm. Well, Sarah, do you think there is a way that the farmers like Jason can overcome the power of your voice?
I think it'd be really tough.
It would be really tough.
Yeah.
So there's the situation. What about it out there? You are the guide. Where are we going to go with this? Is it possible for us small farmers, so those of us who like local food, to convince government to listen to us as well as the big farmers? Is that going to be possible? How is it possible? 831-479-1080. Are we doomed to be stuck in a situation like is mentioned by Betty here, where we're not going to know where our food comes from nor what's on it? That seems to be the direction, given the food labeling fights that are going on, given the fact that we can no longer know which country our meat comes from, because they have eliminated the mandatory country of origin labeling. Is it possible that we'll never know, be allowed to know about the what's in our food, the genetically modified organisms? Is it possible for us to be locked out, period? Now, it might seem unreasonable, but that is a possibility. It has happened, and it happened in China under the reign of Mao Zedong, who was chairman of the Communist Party. During those times, the government stood between those who farmed food and those who ate the food. There were people who lived in the city. There were people who lived in the country. You couldn't cross the barrier. If you were a peasant farmer, you were told what to grow and how much you would be paid for growing it. And you, if you were in the city, you would eat what the government gave you to eat, and because that's all there was to eat. So there it was. The government stood between the two. If you were a farmer and you snuck into the city, they would catch you and throw you in jail. And so that was the way it was until something happened. And what happened was that it was the farmers and the city people getting together to feed each other that changed China. Can that happen here? So those are the questions we have on the table today, and we look forward to your participation. Can we have big government and small farms? Love to hear somebody who can refute Joel Salatin and say, yes, I believe we can have both. Pick up your phone and join us. We're at 831-479-1080, 479-1080 in the 831 area code. This is the Food Chain, Michael Olson. We have Farmer Sarah, we have Farmer Jason, and we have you, 831-479-1080. Pick up your phone and join us. Well, the question on the table today, can we have small farms and big government? That question posed wasn't even a question. It was a statement put on the table by Joel Salatin when he came to town to talk to the Aggies and the activists and the foodies, most of whom adore him. And so he had the crowd really up and roaring with his Virginia down in the farm humor. People love to hear his wit and wisdom, and the crowd was pretty uproarious and having a great time. And then he leaned into the microphone, and without the slightest twitch of uncertainty, he said, you can't have small farms and big government. And the crowd went stone cold silent, didn't have a word to say, because I think it was kind of a shocking notion to them that the big government and the small farm, which both of which they wanted, I believe, are mutually incompatible, at least according to Joel Salatin. But what do you think? And you are the guest today, so pick up your phone and join us. We're at 831-479-1080. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, we have Farmer Sarah here with 1,000 acres of tomatoes. We have Farmer Jason with 1 acre of tomatoes. Can they both get along in this world? Will the government allow for both of them? That's the question. Well, a couple months ago, got a phone call from an attorney. I've used this story before, but it is really illustrative of what we're talking about today. The attorney called in and said, Michael, did you get the letter? And I said, no, what letter? Maybe I did. What letter are you talking about? Well, it's a letter from a big grower shipper organization that represents some of the biggest vegetable growers in California. And I said, nope, didn't get that letter. What did it say? And he said, it said, if local food is taking a bite out of your profit, join us in Washington, D.C. Well, what kind of what would that big organization do in Washington, D.C. to prevent Farmer Jason here with his 1 acre of tomatoes from taking a bite out of Farmer Sarah's 1,000 acres profit? What could they possibly do in Washington, D.C. to affect that change? Well, I guess you could probably guess. They probably went to Congressman Fred Frankfurter's office and said, let's fix this, us congressman. And the congressman probably said, well, okay, let's talk about it. So is that the case? And if that is the case, how can is it ever be possible for small farmers to survive with big government? 831-479-1080 is the phone number. We're going to go to the phones right now, and we're going to talk with Caroline. Caroline, thank you for joining us.
Hi, thank you. I love your show. I love what you guys are doing. And I'm an avid listener when I can. So,
thank you.
All right. You know, it's interesting when we think about, you know, working not just as a small farmer or a small business instead of the trickle-down thing, but it seems to me the awareness that I have been understanding and seeing, you know, really began when this real heavy on cottage industry laws were passed, I think in 09, about like you could not use my apples to make apple butter that you wanted to make in your kitchen, right? Mm-hmm. So you couldn't go to the farmer's market and do such a thing and sell it. You had to go then to the CCOF middleman here to buy the apples in order for you to make your apple butter.
Mm-hmm.
And with all the new, like if you go past the $35,000 a year cottage law thing, then you have to go to a commercial kitchen and do your thing. It seems to me that, and this is also in my understanding, that it's much larger than just if we go to the farm, big business, small farm, because along the way, all the other laws that seem to have changed, which gives us wonderful opportunity because it's like a big cauldron and that's where the gold lies, and that is that the things that have been created, such as the new types of responsibility that your Fish and Game Commission have, such as, you know, controlling a small species, which is very important. But what's been so non-transparent is things like your growing practices become not obsoleted, but they come against the law, right?
Yeah, very much so.
Because if you're growing something and you're mandated to use certain substances or seeds or whatever it is, now that's on the large scale, but even a small farmer could mm-hmm. could be up against that depending on how you're looking at certain practices. If you're gathering something that's in a state park, that's against the law. But if you're gathering a, let's say, a wildflower to use in your product that you're going to sell as a small food producer or whatever, you can do certain things that haven't been legislated yet. But, and I don't mean to be getting so far out, my point of this is that there are many things around us that are getting different types of jurisdiction that are prohibiting this larger big business, because big business isn't just your corporation that has maybe been private. These are infiltrated state shared commons mm-hmm. that have now, we have to start really opening our eyes and maybe start, don't think of small farming, but think of using commercial licensing practices in communities where you're sharing larger team type things, such as the commercial kitchens, and people organizing at that level with this small, you know, the grassroots up instead of the trickle down, because people have to get together and start seeing what has actually impacted to create these laws. It's similar to what we're to be voting on in June on the one thing that's made the big deal is this Proposition 50, which is about letting your state assembly people discipline basically their fellow peers. Well, you know where that goes. That goes nowhere, right? So you've got to figure out.
That's a good. That's a good law. I think I should pass that law for myself.
Well,
Michael Olson, you've
exactly,
been a bad boy.
Exactly. And then when you start looking through, you realize, wow, whatever's going on is sort of the birthing or the restirring or the reignition of this cauldron. It's like thinking the world's going to come to an end. Folks, the world already came to an end. We have been beginning and doing a very, very good job just in the matriculation of spirit, of knowing consciously that we've pulled off whatever, eating, feeding, whatever, to try to reach out and do whatever you can do. But it's like getting the awareness.
Well, Carolyn, do you think it's possible? There seems
possible
to be
possible for what?
Well, there seems to be two ways of looking at that. One from Joel Salatin, who says it's impossible to have that small farm in the big government. Incidentally, I read in Wall Street Journal this morning that every year our government is putting out 80,000 pages of new regulations to make Sir Farmer Jason, with his 1 acre of tomatoes, can't grow tomatoes. Or,
well, you know, you realize what's happened. You just look recently at the marijuana laws and the people that had the 5 acre capacity to grow. You know that the big business that's moving into our area alone is going to up that to say you've got to have, like, you know, 15 acres.
Yeah, can you hold me up to take a quick break? I'm going to pick you up when we come back because you are fun. This is The Food Chain, 831-479-1080. Welcome back. Folks, this is a brief note from Julian, who writes into the Metro Farm forums and to respond to the question, can we have small farms and big business? I would say that big government and small farms don't mix. I farm in the UK and in Poland from where I write. Here we have 1.2 million small farms of 7 hectares or less, mostly self-sufficient with the aim of feeding the family and any surplus sold locally. Big government has food regulations that declare it is illegal to process any farm-raised foods in the farmhouse. Farmers must register as a business and carry out the processing in a separate building. The great majority of small farmers thus carry on in the black, as they say, as they can't afford to conform to the big government regulations. It is the power of the supermarkets that control government, and government controls people. Farmers need to take their destinies into their own hands and link with consumers who feel likewise. Anything else looks like long-term slavery. Caroline, does it look like long-term slavery to you?
Well, if you want to look at slavery and what I'm going to try to give power to, then, you know, I can look at it from the glass half empty or the glass half full. And the thing is, sure, I think fear comes up, and it's a great protection. But I also think that we are asked to look in and be in darkness, which we are designed as humanity. And
what do you mean by that?
Well, darkness is a wonderful place where light is present. It's where, the old saying is, you will always find the gold in the wounding. You will always find the gold in the wounding. And we have been so wounded, humanity, over and over again, because war has always been part of humanity. Mm-hmm. Whatever the black hole is, Earth is being punctured in her little membrane.
Okay.
And it's like we're fighting back. And I don't think there's any accident that we have 7 billion people on the planet as spiritual fertilization, whether we're in our sleep or whether we're in our waking
day.
So
you think this is all a spiritual issue?
No. What I'm saying is that in order to feel like we can be, you know, the new passive systems in what you're going to call electricity are on its way. The AC and the DC current is kind of going to go by the wayside. And what is really, really, I think, occurring is you look at the grab of this kind of the greed, because you see people that don't want to have a threat posed to the new paradigm. And it isn't just technology, but it kind of goes beyond. Like, we have to learn how to go beyond so that we can go back into what is rooted into each memory of anybody.
Okay, Caroline, you're getting a little bit out there for
me. Well, here I'm saying to you.
Bring it home to me, hon.
My family farmed for 200 years. My mother's family's been in this country for 400 years.
Uh-huh.
And it was in upstate New York, where you look at snow plateaus, and how in the world did people ever come out of that darkness into where we are now? Versus if we look at what the last 100 years or 150 years of industrialization has done, what has happened is, I think, out of a, you could look at the 1920s. I mean, the thing is, we want to have the comforts, and yet at the same time, we're not really looking at what we have been given and sort of our God-given mm-hmm. right. And the fact that we call big business just big business, I think that has to be broken into segments again to see where we've gotten so top-heavy, where private corporations have entered in. Recently, the Bechtel Corporation, they lost this big bid to be able to do this consolidation, and now they are having to come up with a $3.5 billion termination fee.
Whoever's
making up these rules for those guys need to learn how to collapse.
Well, they made up that rule themselves, though.
That's what I'm saying. No. That's what I'm saying. So that collapsing or falling on one sword is as old as time when mm-hmm. it comes to the greatest powers that have always failed. But through humanity, through whatever you want to say, the wonders of how we are using technology today, such as the internet, I have to be very mindful of when I go to the internet, what I'm going to try to do.
Okay, I understand that, Carolyn.
Okay.
But I want you to bring this home to me,
Carolyn. Okay.
So here's my question to you.
Currently, let me just say this. Currently, you could, if you wanted to kind of usurp what's in place, anything you want to do, let's say you wanted to make some kind of butter or whatever, you can go to a farm, let's say, and buy the butter that's approved, because it seems to me that the dairy industry laws are so draconian.
No,
and then
no.
You can go and find some wild source and go out and pick it yourself. I don't know.
Go ahead.
It could be my phone. I'm sure I'm not well.
No, you're doing fine. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. All right, so you can go and do some things and then go to the commercial level, okay, instead mm-hmm. of the cottage industry level. So therefore, you're kind of playing in the middleman, but you're not going to have to participate because they
so you can stay small and not make any money, is that what you're saying?
Well, here's what I'm saying. If we have to look at what we're doing right now to survive and to be able to have a coping mechanism such as behavioral. See, I believe behavior is the gold, okay? The gold that we have as individuals
mm-hmm.
to gather.
I have to take a quick break, but let me ask you the question.
Sure.
Okay. Can we have small farms and big government?
Not in the way that you're saying, in that black and white paradigm, no.
Okay. Thank you, Carolyn.
All right. Thank you.
Bet. 831-479-1080. What do you think? Do you think we can have small farms and big government? Or do you think it's like Julian says, the government's going to make all the rules and force us or the people who are local agriculture to be underground about it? Hey, buddy, want to buy a tomato? Well, okay, this from Dean, who writes into the food chain forums at metrofarm.com. Most small family farms who grow and process their own products on site without all the new regs will soon be made criminals all across the USA. Despite zero defect products produced by safe heirloom techniques for over 100 years, big government will find a way to prevent them from selling at the local market. Fresh, wholesome food will have to be sold under the counter, in back alleys, and possibly under the cover of night to avoid prosecution. What the hell is going on, America? But gee whiz, that sounds just like Julian, who says the same thing about Poland and the UK. What is going on? Can small farms survive with big government? Let's go and ask Diane. Diane, thank you for tuning in to the Food Chain Radio program.
My cynical one-word answer is no. Neither one of those demographics will ever be compatible. The farmers and the people are going to have to always ask the question you're asking in all the generations ahead of us so that the question doesn't die out. Let's take an example here in Carmel Valley. There's a pretty little farm here called Earthbound. It was recently bought, 2 years ago, $500 million that Earthbound organization was sold for to Horizon. All you have to do is watch what's happening to that organization. This pretty little farm, which is really grassroots organic, very nice little thing they got going on. Just in the last 2 years, Horizon's been introducing, it's a big corporation now. They've been introducing their products there are changes. They're subtle, but you could just see them on the local level. So the selling out of the smaller farmers, organic farmers, selling out to the bigger business, that's a little worrisome. But the bottom line is really the answer, the money. You don't have to go very far down the rabbit hole to see that if you have more money, that's what's going to control us in the future. The lobbyists going to the hallways in Capitol Hill and getting an ear for this stuff. It's just we don't have that kind of control.
So if you don't have the economies of scale, like Farmer Sarah does with her 1,000 acres of tomatoes, you're stuck to, like Farmer Jason with his 1 acre, you're kind of toast.
You could be, Michael. But it's good that our generations keep asking the question you're asking, even though it feels redundant and hard to hear you doing this, because it's like, haven't we already answered this question? Why are we just repeating history over and over? The bottom line is you and guys like you in the future are going to have to keep holding these conferences on this, because subsequent generations are just, they're not going to get it unless they hear it. So, you know, that's just my two-bit opinion here. And
but it's a good one. Thank you for expressing it. Really appreciate it, Diana. Let's go to Gilbert. Gilbert, thank you for tuning in the Food Chain Radio program.
Yes, good morning. You know, the question in itself is, I don't know if I would say loaded or contradicting based on what I understand as a big government. I do believe that small farms can exist if the market for selling their products is, you know, open. But what most people think of big government is, okay, the government is regulating these things, therefore they're intruding.
Just about out of time, life. Gilbert, what do you think? Yeah. Can small farms survive with big government?
Yeah, if big government doesn't mean government helping the corporations.
Okay, good. Thank you very much, Gilbert. Yeah. Really appreciate it. We just ran out of time. Folks, this has been the Food Chain Radio program. You can participate in the show, though you did not call in, by logging on the forum page at metrofarm.com and making your comments. Thank you all for tuning in. Remember, Michael Olson's second law of the food chain, the farther you go from the source of your food, less control you have over what's in your food.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.